It's 8:17, and our first guest this morning on the line is Melena Stevens. She is the Snyderville Planning Commissioner, here to give us an update on Tuesday's meeting. Good morning, Melena. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Yeah, so some people are wondering, when we've got a project with 1,100 residential units, retail, offices, hotels, how can that actually have less traffic impact than the Boyer Tech Park would have had?
When we're looking at the Boyer project, we're looking at a project that's going to have inload and outload at the same time as our peak ski, peak inload for all of our other businesses. So in looking at this, the trip generation would be throughout the day and spread throughout the day, as opposed to, you know, between 7 o'clock and 9 o'clock and then again from 4 to 6, which is when we're seeing most of the traffic currently.
But even the people that would be living there and all of the various, you know, businesses and that type of thing, they would still be on a similar commuting kind of schedule, would they not? With schools and...
Some of them may be. With this, there's a very robust bus system that is included, as well as this project is in a very unique location. It's next to the services that these people would need, that they could very easily walk to, bike to. We're trying, as we're looking at this project and with the development itself, trying to ensure that it's a place that really is walkable and livable, and so these people can get to all the places that they would need to go without a car.
So was this assessment or study done as a result of something the Planning Commission requested, or was this the developer that brought that study to the Planning Commission?
As a Planning Commission, traffic is always something that we want to look at the impacts of. With Dakota Pacific specifically, I know staff has been working with them for months to ensure that they know what this community is concerned with. And so as the public has seen throughout this process thus far, we've taken all of the pieces that we know are critical to this project and critical to the community and broken it down into chunks that we've approached each meeting. So we had a meeting on massing. We had a meeting on traffic. We had a meet and transportation. We had a meeting on all the components of the project. And this, for me, has been really helpful, and I believe for the rest of the commission, at being able to take such a large project and chunk it down into ways that we can really digest and really give some helpful feedback and ask important questions. And hopefully it's been helpful to the public as well, and we'll be moving forward so that they can digest it in a similar fashion.
Okay, so let me just clarify then. Your answer to that question is that it was the Planning Commission study that assessed this and decided that the inload and outload would be less of an impact.
I mean,
whose study was it, I guess?
It was the study that Dakota Pacific contractor had done. But it was something that they knew that we would want to see.
Okay. And so you're confident then, in terms of looking at that, because obviously they have, you know, a vested interest in making that study work the way they want it to work.
Absolutely. And we've made no decisions at this point. I think with this, we're looking at the traffic impacts of a large development. With the Boyer project, the traffic was anticipated to be more, and they indicated that they were the number stock in 2008 didn't have all of the inload that we currently have. I think that's something that we have to consider as well, is the place that the developer is coming from as well. I think all of these things will come into the decision that we make, but I don't think that we can just at the same time discount the work that's been done by a professional that specializes in this. So it's something that we'll have to consider with all of those things in mind.
Sure. And sometimes, you know, second opinions or third opinions can actually work to understand
Absolutely.
The true balance of
things.
We're just
not quite to that point yet. We're still okay. Kind of just being introduced to all of these components of the project.
Okay. So Dakota, they laid out their logic in terms of, you know, in the meeting this week. What do you personally think about it?
What do I personally think of the project?
Yeah, no, I mean, of just the logic behind turning it into a, you know, more of a mixed use rather than just a tech park. What's your personal take?
I think it's a really interesting concept of taking a project that, from what developers have stated and from what we've seen over the last 10 years, does not appear to be viable at this point, and taking it and turning it into something that could provide some benefits to the community. Affordable housing for both Park City and Summit County is a critical priority and a huge focus, as we are not, we do not have enough units to supply for that. So that is something that I think is interesting. A place for a more functional bus system is really critical as well. Having a lot of these interconnected components could be really interesting for the community moving forward. At the same time, I think it is absolutely critical that we look at this with a fine-tooth comb, that we make sure that we are really helping to provide something that is going to give benefit to the community and not something that is just going to exacerbate problems that we already have.
So how would you manage then the idea that maybe Salt Lake employees would like to live there and that it would become a bedroom for Salt Lake commuters?
So that's something that we have discussed, is that some, you know, that some people that don't currently live here would move up here. However, we do have, in a lot of the other affordable housing projects and different things, there are waterfall provisions, meaning that there's a certain time period that they have to advertise to people that live within a certain radius or work within a certain radius currently, and then if they're not able to fill the housing based off of that, then they can kind of expand, but it's incrementally, right? It's not, okay, well, we couldn't find anyone in Park City, so now we can take anyone that's living in, you know, in Salt Lake or in the state. It goes progressively over time, and that is something that has been helpful thus far, and that's something that that we are looking into. Again, we're not quite at that point where we're looking into those specific details at this place, but that is something I know that my fellow commissioners have mentioned during the meeting that they would like to see.
Oh, okay. So the 1,100 residential units proposed, would they all be affordable housing and rental as well as ownership opportunities?
So again, we've just had one meeting really focusing on the housing component. From what they stated previously, the vast majority, something 70 to 90%, would be affordable. Again, I don't have those exact numbers, that they're still working on that. And that the affordable would be rental, which is a huge need within the community, as there haven't been rental projects built in, you know, 7 or 8 years.
Okay. And you had a trip, I guess. You took a trip down to the Dakota Projects that are in Salt Lake, and they showed off their workforce housing there in Murray. What was your takeaway with that?
I thought it was really interesting, and we discussed in the meeting on Tuesday as well, how critical management and good management is to these projects. That if, you know, you can build a small project or a large project, if it doesn't have good management, both for parking and for the affordable housing component or just housing component, it's not going to be as successful. And so that was something in looking at the projects that they had created. And we also went to some projects of other developers that they're associated with. And it really struck me how well managed those facilities were, and I think that's something moving forward that we will also really be considering.
Yeah, and didn't you bring up a concern that you had, especially about a separate property manager, that Dakota would turn that over to a different property manager? Is that an issue, or where do you stand on that?
You know, that's something that we will consider, and with Dakota, from what they indicated, and we'll continue to go over this, that they have the intention of maintaining the property. They have a track record. They do have other properties down in Salt Lake that they have built and maintained for several years. But that is something moving forward. I'm not sure exactly how we ensure that that happens, but that's something that we're looking into to see how we can make sure that we have good management there. Because, again, I think with a project that this large in scope and this critical, especially in that place, we need we need that component or I think it won't work as effectively.
Mm-hmm. And then just finally, you know, just from what you've seen so far, would this project be friendly to you as a pedestrian, a biker, someone who lived there and didn't want to get in their car all the time?
From what we've seen so far, and again, it's still, we're still kind of in preliminary phases, that's one thing that they've really focused on is how the circulation, the pedestrian bike circulation in conjunction with a car circulation within the project. And so they have some, I mean, they indicated during our last meeting that they would have a separated bike path. So it would be separated by either grade or grass or some sort of barrier from the street. So we wouldn't have bikes and cars kind of intermingling in a way that the bikes may feel unsafe and thus people not want to bike as frequently. The same thing with pathways through the project, getting directly to the transit center. They're, you know, they're proposed some things in conjunction with UDOT that are very aspirational but very interesting. And that's been a major focus. I think that they've taken the work that was done on the Kimball Junction Master Plan that was approved and have really taken that to heart and tried to incorporate a lot of the components that came from that master plan into their project, especially in relation to mobility.
Sure. And what kind of impacts on that whole region as far as 224 is concerned? Are there, you mentioned UDOT, I presume they're involved in the conversation then?
Well, with a transit center, especially with that component, that's going to have to be a collaboration between a lot of different agencies. You know, UDOT will have to be involved, the county will have to be involved, likely with the partnership between Summit County and Park City. Park City would need to be involved in that as well as Dakota Pacific and potentially other stakeholders. And so that is a large-scale project. But with that, that could assist, especially if we're able to do some sort of bus rapid transit or something like that. It could really help if we're able to re-envision how that area is working. One of the things that I thought was really interesting from the traffic study that they presented was that currently U Boulevard and the I-80 Kimball Junction overpass is already not at a great level of service. And so with that regardless of how this project turns out, that's something as a community that we really need to look at and address, because that's not going to get better on its own. And with some of these solutions that they presented, as well as, you know, potentially some things we could do working with UDOT, that could really help with those areas. So I thought that was fascinating and something that as a community we really need to take a stronger look at.
Yeah, so lots more to come on that. Hey, just quickly, on a separate item, the plans for the Kenyon's employee housing, what, about 1,200 pillows, 1,153 pillows, 6 buildings, 6 townhome units. Melina, what are your impressions on that?
So with this project, this is already a project that was entitled through the Kenyon's development agreement when we reopened and redid that several years ago. So this is a project we were anticipating coming back to us. I think the developer has done an excellent job at trying to capture some of the feedback that we've given to other affordable projects as far as really making these livable spaces, ensuring that they're made with materials that are going to last and that it's going to be a nice place to live. They, again, have focused a lot on the mobility within the project and also trying to position the project so that the people that live there will naturally want to take paths that will get them to where they need to go without, you know, crossing over large parking lots or roads that may be unsafe. And so I think that it's a very thoughtful project. I think that they've done a great job with the piece that they've done already, and there's other portions that we'll see in the near future.
Yeah, so is it on schedule? Are things going as expected in terms of timing? I think at one point we heard that 2021 might be the first point in time where some units might be available.
I don't have that exactly in front of me currently. From what we discussed in the meeting, it sounds like as far as getting their plans approved, that they were within the time period that was established, maybe a month or two ahead of that, assuming that they get approval within the next few months. I believe they had some time in the spring that they needed to have the final approvals. From what they stated, that they intend to start, if they get approvals, they intend to start in the beginning of the building season once the snow melts, and that it would take approximately 24 months to complete, and that they plan not to phase it, but to kind of build it and have it all ready at the same time.
Oh, okay.
So in it, okay. About 24 months.
Yeah, so could be a lot going on in the next couple of years at the bottom of there of the Canyons Village.
Yes, there will.
Okay, well, thank you. We're going to have to leave it there, Melina. I appreciate you coming on this morning.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
You too. Snyderville Planning Commissioner Melina Stevens. Good morning. You're listening to the Local News Hour. It is 8:34, and our next two guests in the station here are Jonathan Weidenhammer and Alexis Versen, Senior Transportation Planner with Park City Municipal, and they're here to talk about the drop and load zones on Main Street this winter. Thanks for coming by.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. How are
you,
Alexa?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Alexis, apologies. Okay. So there are going to be certain parking spots along Main Street that will have to be set aside, I guess, beginning this winter. Maybe it's already happened. These will be for vehicles holding a city hall permit. And the idea is to reduce congestion and improve safety in the Main Street core. Who would like to begin talking about the inception of that and just what it's going to look like?
Well, we keep hearing from the city council their goals about transit first and reducing cars and reducing congestion and traffic. And we've really seen some safety concerns with the double parking and dropping and loading on Main Street. And so we wanted to bring a new parking system to try to help alleviate that congestion and clean some of it up. So we've created a number of paid parking areas on Main Street, these drop and load zones. And commensurate to that, we've created three free drop and load zones in Sweet Alley and at the bottom of Main Street to try to provide some balance. So the idea is if you wanted to have premium access on Main Street for dropping off and picking up a good level of service, we're removing about 50 or 55 paid parking spots out of the system to create these zones. We're going to mark them with easy signs. We're going to have the parking enforcement guys out there hand shoveling these areas and having lots of salt on them to keep them clean and open and ready to go.
So how does parking enforcement enforce? Are they able to write tickets and that type of thing? Or?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the city council was very concerned about how we enforce these and how we clean them up. I mean, if you come down and you pay your $200 to get a parking permit and there's somebody sitting there already, the whole thing kind of breaks. And so the parking enforcement guys will be writing tickets if you park in one of these without a paid parking permit. But city council also next Thursday is going to consider, and they've already provided direction to staff to come back and allocate a full-time senior new police officer to the street and a new car and a new ticket writing system. And so we're going to be writing moving violations for anybody who double parks, and that officer will be allocated to Main Street. And so it's going to be a combination of the parking enforcement folks and the police trying to provide a very acute level of enforcement service on the street.
Sure, and that sounds like it's going to be a night, weekends, and holiday job.
Well, I don't want to agree over the air that it's not going to happen every day. But yeah, if we're going to focus the resources, you'll probably see it on the busier times.
Sure. Now there are quite a number of designated drop and load zones. So how will that be structured? It's 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 15 minutes.
So
Alexis?
The intent is the drop and load zones will be for active loading and unloading only. We do have the option for, and that's from 5 p.m. until midnight. So the peak busy hours, the restaurant scene, the bar crowd, things like that, to really facilitate that traffic flow and keep vehicles moving down Main Street. And then after that time frame, we do have the opportunity to allow these ground transportation vehicles to stage in these areas once the parking demand has gone down for the evening. So there are some opportunities there. And then we have some areas on Sweet Alley specifically that are designated for staging areas so that vehicles do have the opportunity to wait for a fare and they don't have to keep driving and circulating.
So when you say stage, that's for the taxi companies, the Uber, Lyft drivers, that type of thing?
Correct. Anyone who wants to opt into this permit system has some areas on Main Street after the peak hours. And then if you don't want to opt into the permit program, the areas on Sweet Alley are free for those companies to use.
Okay. And you have gotten some pushback. The city has gotten pushback from the Lyft and Uber businesses.
It's been interesting to watch. We've been working on this, rolling it out for the better part of 6 months, and we've had broad support from the lodging, company and the local for-hire taxi companies. We've had numerous conversations with Lyft and Uber, but there are two specific areas we're getting some pushback on. From the Lyft and Uber standpoint, their drivers are contractors for the transportation network company, and they don't expect that their individual drivers will probably purchase one of these $200 passes. And so they've made a proposal to the city to, in return for free access to the drop and load zones for all their drivers, that they would start to share some aggregated form of data to learn how many trips, where they're coming from, where they're not coming from. And so right now we haven't taken them up on that. We want to keep a level playing field to a degree that everybody, if they want access to these, should have to pay. But I think we're going to try to bring them out here and see what they really have to offer. So that's one area of pushback. And the other one, we've started to get some, I would say, more acute feedback on the $200 fee. And I think that's fair. I mean, $200 is a lot of money, but when you look at it at $50 a month for premium access to some really good locations on Main Street, we feel pretty comfortable with that cost. And the inception of that cost was a conversation about the city's going to forego about $90,000 in parking revenue to do this, and we're going to take on about $200,000 of cost for new cop to do this. So the city's going to subsidize this. If we sell 200 passes at $200, $40,000, we're going to subsidize
pencil.
This. It's not even close to penciling.
Right.
And again, this isn't about making money for us. This is really about the goal. It's the first year. We're going to see how it goes. And I think we feel pretty good about the cost. It's not an unreasonable cost in our mind to have that premium access for a 4-month program. The other part of that pushback is, well, why do I have to pay that? And there's going to be no return when it's a 12-month permit they're issuing me. And I think my take on that is, if and when we extend it to the peak of the summertime, then you get 2 months of bonus out of it. So, I feel pretty confident in the cost.
Right. So what if what if suppliers are trying to make some deliveries during that time frame as well?
Good question.
What do you have happening there?
So, again, the delivery program as we know it today, we're not touching. It's, people deliver. And I think the best thing about our parking enforcement guys and our cops is their discretion in knowing the town. It's a small town. We know who the delivery guys are. We know who the Uber driver guys are. And, another important thing to mention is when Carolyn wants to bring her daughters to the River Horse and have dinner and drop them off, I think they're going to know it's Carolyn dropping off their daughters. It's not, the Steins van.
We're taking the bus.
And this is about commercial vehicles and how they function on the street. It's not about delivery vehicles. It's not about Alexis and her dog. It's about, people who are coming to the street providing a commercial pickup and drop off service.
Yeah, so we have a pretty major problem with idling. And in fact, I walk up Daly Canyon often, just getting out of the office here, and the idling is just rampant. And I just wonder, will that be part of the efforts on as far as enforcement goes?
I would say yes, as we ramp up personnel and sort of the intent to manage Main Street in a better way. That's certainly something that we can discuss with our folks. All of the new signage going out for the drop and load and staging areas do have the idle free logo on them, and we're going to continue to push that messaging.
Okay. And here's my final question. This is just to poke you guys, but why not just go one way? Why not just do one way down Main Street, one way up Sweet Alley?
It's a great question. You probably know we have a new city engineer. He just started, and he asked me that same question yesterday. So he and I spent about an hour together.
I have an engineering mind.
Well, what I kind of said to him is, this is kind of the gateway drug into the next system. There's too many cars. They're causing terrible congestion and safety issues. And I don't think the city council at the end of the day, I don't think this is going to accomplish all their goals. And I think we've had groping conversations about one way and no cars and all kinds of things. I think you're going to continue to see us try and push and try different things, and not a one-way circulation pattern. You're going to start to see that a little bit during Sundance on Park Avenue. I think it's logical that you're going to continue to see that evolve. So I think it's a great question, Carolyn.
Okay, so maybe we'll be trying it out in some really peak times.
I think so. I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay.
And again, the council gets to tell us that, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. So anything else that you'd like to add, Alexis?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate that this is a pilot program during the winter peak season. We are absolutely looking for feedback on this, both from the ground transportation companies as to how it functions, as well as the general public, Main Street businesses, and other stakeholders. The project website is on engageparkcity.org. You can go there. It's right front and center on that screen. There's a Q&A forum that you can participate in. Also, my contact information is on there. Please feel free to reach out.
Okay. And this is going to be really well signed, really, I mean, defined. Will it be just with signs on the sidewalk areas, or will they be painted onto the road? Well, painting, who knows?
Well, we're going to try to paint the curbs now. We're not confident it'll stick, and we're going to sign the heck out of it. Yeah. And we'll go from there.
Okay.
But I think what Alexis just said about the This is moving, and we've taken a lot of input, and we've changed some significant things even over the past 2 weeks about how this rolls out in terms of hours, expanding some zones where there's staging. We need the feedback. We want the feedback. So please, you know, keep it coming in. Alexis is going to be the main point of contact. So we're looking forward to getting this going. And again, it'll start, we anticipate, next Friday.
Okay, yeah, start date. Well, here we go.
And we are taking permit applications now down at the parking office, and we are issuing hang tags, I think, over the counter when you come in to apply for your permits.
Correct. Do you have to do it in person, or can you do it online?
You can do it online. It's not a web-based form yet, but you can email it in, and we will actually mail you permit hang tags, so you don't have to come in.
Where's that? What's the email address on that?
That's a great question. So the application is on the parking permits website, and then the email address that you will send it to, I believe it's parking_permits@parkcity.org.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. That's Jonathan Weidenhammer and Alexis Versen with Park City Municipal. Thanks for coming by. My guest this morning, final guest with the Local News Hour, is Executive Director Jocelyn Scudder with the Summit County Arts Council. She is here to talk about the Brand PC pop-up shop and some holiday celebrations going on, I believe, tomorrow.
Yes.
Thank you for coming by.
Thanks so much for having me, Carolyn. We are here to talk today about a big event that we have coming up tomorrow, and it's our Brand PC holiday celebration. And so many of you who are familiar with the Arts Council know that our mission is to promote, support, and strengthen arts and culture countywide, and we do a lot of that through programming. And Brand PC is one of our largest programs, and really the mission of the program is to spotlight our local creative brands and their products and entrepreneurs throughout Summit County. And so we have a pop-up shop on Main Street. It's at 692 Main Street on Lower Main. And we've actually had the pop-up open since September. And we are just, it's the holiday season. We are fully curated with 42 brands, all who live and work in Summit County. And we just want to celebrate being fully curated and having all of these brands available. So we're inviting everybody to come out tomorrow from 7 to 10 p.m. And we're going to have delicious cocktails from Alpine Distilling. We'll have food. We have a DJ Funky Boss. And so really, it's just a celebration of our local creative sector and our entrepreneurial sector specifically. You know, when we talk about arts and culture, we think about artists, we think about musicians, but a lot of times creative entrepreneurs are left out of the conversation. And so it's one of our priorities to make sure that we're supporting those creatives in our town. And Brand PC is one of the ways we do that. So everything on the floor will be for sale. Really, we're also trying to spark some local holiday shopping through this program. And so people can come in and we have bags, we have backpacks, lotions, books, cards, chocolate, ritual chocolates in there. And so if you're interested in the types of products that are being sold at Brand PC, you can head actually to brandedpc.org and we'll have all of the makers listed there, their products, and also their stories. Storytelling is a big element of this program.
Yeah. So now let's just clarify. This location is the old iconic Zoom restaurant. Is that right?
So no. And I do know this is confusing. We're actually the Arts Council is operating two sister spaces on Main Street currently. One is Zoom, which is that address is 660 Main Street. And that's our space called Create PC. That's more visual art focused. It's a local artist collective where we have 13 local artists in residence selling fine art. And they also have workspace to create art. right next door, so for, if you're walking down Main Street, on your right, right next door is Brand PC. So they're sister locations, and Brand PC supports our local creative entrepreneurs, their products, and we tell their story. So that's more of a shop retail space, whereas Create PC, which is in the old Zoom, is more of a gallery meets makerspace meets retail.
Okay, now we'll Create PC also be open tomorrow night? Will there be
It will be open until 6 p.m. Okay. It will be open until 6 p.m. We are a small organization, so we need all our staff over at the party. But we are also, both spaces are open 7 days a week. So we're open Sunday through Thursday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And then on Friday and Saturday, we're open 12 to 8 to catch that, you know, late restaurant crowd. And we're going to be open through the beginning of January. We shut down for Sundance Film Festival. And then we're going to pop both spaces back up in February. So we do encourage you to come out, shop local this holiday season, and join us for our party tomorrow night. It is 21 plus, but it's open to the public. We hope you join us. But if you miss it, we are going to be open through the end of the ski season, through April. So yeah, we're going to be around for a little while.
Yeah. So is this free? I mean, the
spaces were donated to us. We're paying a little bit for utilities, but we're grateful for the support of Ken Abdallah and Mike Sweeney, who have donated the spaces to the Arts Council. And, you know, through these programs, we're able to kind of really take advantage of this opportunity and give it back to our local creatives. So we actually are directly supporting about 70 local creatives, whether they're fine artists or whether they're local creative entrepreneurs, through both Create PC, the Artists in Residence. We have a community gallery there, and then we have 42 brands and PC. So it's really a real manifestation of our mission, because we love to support our local creatives. And it's really what it's all about. So we're thrilled to have the opportunity and grateful for the support.
Okay, and the event tomorrow is free to get into, 7
yeah,
to 10?
Yeah, okay. So the event is free. It's 692 Main Street, 7 to 10 p.m. Come, you know, bring, we hope that you want to shop. And honestly, I have to say, there's something for everyone at Brand PC. The common denominator with all of the brands there is that they're local, which allows for a really eclectic mix of products. But we just hope that you guys are feeling festive and want to come out, grab a drink, do some shopping, and join us.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, just if you want to find out more, we have two websites. PCSCArts.org is our main website. And then for the program Brand PC, it's brandedpc.org.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Summit County Arts Council Executive Director Jocelyn Scudder. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.